is the Youth Worker Collective podcast from Young People's Ministries. You don't have to be in ministry alone with resources, coaching, games, and more at umcyoungpeople.com.
It must be a Monday because we're doing the Youth Worker Recharge.
Indeed, sir. The Youth Worker Recharge is on lock. I think I used that one right. I'm not 100% sure.
Is that what the young people say today? I've stopped keeping track. I'm that old.
I've heard that said sometime in the last 10 years. So.
So yes, definitely applicable to today because we're not going to get stuck on words and slang that may or may not
right.
be, but we are going to talk about vocational conversations with young people. So before we dive into a little bit of kind of brain science for what's developmentally appropriate for talking vocation, you know, Jeremy, if I was to toss this softball out there and say, what is a vocation or how would you define vocation? What would you offer up?
Chris, I really appreciate you not prepping me in any way for this very hard question before we went live.
I think the best answers happen this way.
But I think, for real, I think vocation is interesting because vocation is not always job, right? You can feel like for example, a perfect example is someone who feels like they are meant to be an entertainer, an artist, whatever, but cannot yet support themselves on that. So they bartend or they work as an Uber driver or whatever, and they go to auditions, they paint, they create music. Their vocation might be musician, but their job might be Uber driver. And so I think that's the distinction I think is important to make when we talk about vocation. The vocation is the thing that you're like, yeah, this is what I want to do with my life. And it's really great when career and vocation can go hand in hand, but that's not always the case.
I completely agree with you. You know, there was for a long time when it was graduation season, people would, offer up advice to new graduates and say, you know, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life.
Uh-huh. You
know what? And that's very true. It also doesn't necessarily mean that you get paid to do that thing that you're not working for, right?
Right.
And there have been a lot of recent studies that have come out looking at the choices that Generation Z and even the older folks in Generation Alpha are making related to what they do for a living. And the money part is a big part of the equation for them. They have seen other generations go through a couple of financial crises. And so financial stability and financial independence is becoming a big goal. And so to hear you be able to say there is a difference sometimes between vocation, what we say for that, and career is a really important distinction for us to be able to make. So we're talking vocation today, right?
Right.
The things that you might do to give yourself a sense that your life has a meaning, that you've got purposeful work or purposeful energy being spent in the life that you're creating for yourself.
Yeah.
A lot of times, right, if we're talking vocation in church, there are folks that will make the assumption that we're talking about becoming clergy, right? Like you're talking vocation because you're going to get ordained, you're going to become a pastor in a church. And the first thing I want to be able to say is we are making this conversation much more broad than that.
Okay. Yeah.
When we talk vocation, we're not only talking about the opportunity that people have to become clergy or to become ordained and serve as a pastor in a church. Vocation is so much bigger than that when we're talking about purpose and meaning. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of churches honestly have a tough time talking vocation because they're not sure where to start. Living a purposeful life feels like a very mature conversation that you might want to wait until you've got a youth who's in high school to start because you're going to talk about some very heady concepts. But what Jeremy and I want to talk through today is actually there are very developmentally appropriate ways to start conversations about living a purposeful life with younger than youth ages, like really starting at about the age of 8 or 9. And the earlier you start these conversations as a church leader, the easier they're going to get as your young people mature and can process information in new ways. So,
and as a parent, right?
And for sure. I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because both you and I would have children in the age group that we are discussing today for when these vocational conversations can pop up. So let's talk brain science, then we'll come back to the kiddos. So there are two processes that happen during childhood and adolescence that I know, Jeremy, you get really excited when we get to talk about them. So I'm just going to say the words and then pass the ball to you. The first one that we want to explore is synaptic pruning.
Yes. Okay. Synaptic pruning is the thing that you experience is that you talk with a fifth grader in their fifth grade Sunday school class or a fourth grader, and you say, you ask them to respond, to explain something, and they come back immediately. Fantastic. They get it. They understand it. And then you talk to them a year or two later when they're in sixth grade, you ask them the same exact question and they are dumbfounded. And it feels like you might say, I know they had this ability, this mental cognitive ability. And you would be right. Because what happens is there is a severing of synapses in the brains, neurons, like connecting to each other. There is a severing of an enormous number of those that happens during adolescence. And then a sort of just surge of new connections. And part of that surge of new connections, it's all fueled, obviously, by hormones. But like all of the things that you sort of traditionally associate with adolescence, risk-taking behavior, all of that, it actually is the brain priming them to do new things, to try new things, to be adventurous, and to make new neural connections, as many as they possibly can. And so what happens is there's this pruning and then this like just explosion of way more neural connections than they had in childhood by the end of adolescence. But there is this like gap period where they actually have less cognitive ability in a lot of different areas than they did just a year or two earlier.
It drives teachers crazy. It drives parents crazy. It drives youth leaders crazy sometimes. The reason that I wanted to bring up that process as a part of our discussion about vocation is having this talk or bringing up the idea of vocation once over the course of a year isn't going to be enough for it to stick because it's going to get pruned in the process that the brain is going through, right? So
and
having a conversation multiple times, genuinely important.
Yeah. And if you make that first connection, right? Maybe the pruning happened. You talk about this concept of vocation or whatever it is. You make that connection initially. That connection will not last if it's one time. I think that the way that it's something called, I'm stealing your thunder, the next word, myelination.
Steal it. Go into myelination. Yes.
Myelination, I think the best way I have, it helps me to understand it is like, if you are going between, if you live in the country and you're going between your house, your backyard and your neighbor's backyard, right? You can take a path, right? And the first time you take a path, you like trample some things, right? And you go to your neighbor's backyard, that path is great. And you can follow it back home most likely. But if you don't go on that path again, it just grows back up and it disappears. Same thing with these neural connections. If you travel them once, they establish themselves, they don't stay. But when you're going to your best friend's backyard over and over and you take that same path, you will put a rut in the ground and you will eventually have a path that will last for years and years and years because you've traveled that path over and over. The same thing happens with these neural connections. It's something called myelination. You're not trampling things down. You're actually coding those neural connections in something called myelin. And every time you go, it puts another little coat and it gets easier for them to travel that path. And then another time, easier and easier and easier until they're sort of like strong neural connections on those paths.
That's exactly right. And it makes information trying to pass from neuron to neuron move that much quicker and be able to help a response almost feel natural or almost immediate, right? And so if you have ongoing conversations about vocation or what it means to live a purposeful life, the more that pathway is traveled in the brain, that is going to be a set of questions or a set of experiences that a young person will come back to when they're problem solving, when they're trying to figure out what they want to do for a career, or if life feels a little bit empty and they want to try to find some purpose in it, they're going to be able to go back to that pathway that you as a leader help them create by having conversations about vocation. Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
So those are two processes. The processes were synaptic pruning and myelination. Those processes take place inside the human body. They take place inside the brain. And there are three parts of the brain, Jeremy, that I'd love to be able to highlight really quickly before we get into the conversation specifically related to age level discussions about vocation. Number one, everybody's favorite part of the brain. Well, 90% of people's favorite part of the brain, the prefrontal cortex.
Right. Prefrontal cortex. It's the brake pedal in the brain. It's the thing that helps you anticipate, to forecast things, and to make decisions based on that. So the easiest way for me is like, if I am running towards a fence and I have a friend running perpendicular to me, my prefrontal cortex will go forward and say, oh, they're running at the rate where if I keep at this speed, we're going to hit each other. I slow down, or they slow down, or I don't slow down because I'm a teenager and my prefrontal cortex isn't working. And we just slam as hard as possible into each other. It also works on social behavior. It's the part of the brain that anticipate or that interprets nonverbal communication and, all kinds of things like that. And again, we didn't really talk about this age in the earlier section, but we don't finish this until mid-20s, late-20s, depending.
It really is one of the last parts of the brain to become fully formed and neurally connected, right, through synaptic pruning and myelination to the rest of the brain. So you've had experiences with teenagers where you're like, well, what were you thinking? And they say, I don't know what I was thinking. The teenager is not lying. The teenager is absolutely telling the truth. Their brain is not wired in such a way that they could figure out the consequences of the path that they were on or the actions that they were taking. Okay. All right. The limbic system.
Limbic system is really like the gas pedal, right? Mm-hmm. And this is the thing that gives the rewards, right? It makes you want to keep doing things. And in adolescence, it gives you either nothing or $1 million reward, right? and that good feeling is the thing that calls us into more risk, more adventure, more of all of that kind of stuff. It means though that our emotions, because it's like the emotional center of the brain, it sort of opens up really wide. That's why teenagers have really big feelings about stuff. And those really big feel, like I said, it's all the way open or all the way closed, like a malfunctioning gas pedal. It's like you can either tap it and it's like a button instead of a pedal, right? You tap it and you're flooring it, or you tap it and you're closing that down. Right. That's what's going on in the limbic system.
An example might be, right, like, what'd you do at school today? Nothing. How are you feeling? Fine. That's the nothing. Right. You ask that same
and then question, you say, well, what about French class?
Sure. And then tears begin. Right.
Right. Like, and you're like, what happened?
I was just asking about French class. I don't know what
you say, what happened in French class? And they say, oh, well, my teacher forgot my name. Okay. Got it.
Yeah, this is a big enough deal that it's worth tears for you, right? That is the limbic system in action, whether it's at 100% or at 0%. At the heart of the limbic system is something called the amygdala, okay? Mm-hmm. And that is the part of the limbic system. Again, it's a little part in the brain as well, that really leads to emotional reactions. And having an enlarged and active amygdala, which happens as teenagers start to grow up and go through puberty, can lead to more emotionally driven decision making, right?
Yeah.
rather than logical, because again, the prefrontal cortex not necessarily connected, and so you've got these emotional responses that you're working through first, and then everything else follows.
And this is important, and I was talking to a person who trains teachers in brain science, and this is one of the things that she teaches teachers about, which is like you got to think of like they've got these two tracks. They've got this sort of logical thing where we can logically process. We have this ability. It's hard, but we have this emotional system, and if there are emotions, we are on the emotional track. Right. It's not like we've got emotions and we can sort of sift through them and be logical. No, no, no. If we've got emotions, we're on emotions. And until the emotions are dealt with, we can't go back to the logical track. And that's really important, because if you're asking somebody, for example, to make a vocational decision, that is something that needs to engage logic. Right. Lots of thought, lots of consideration, talking to multiple sources, doing that kind of stuff. We don't do that in the height of emotion on Saturday night at a retreat, right?
Here we go.
We do this in the cool morning after the retreat, right? Or whatever. We don't, because you can.
I've seen it.
Get a kid to commit to being a pastor and at 10 years old, 11 years old, 12 years old, and in the height of this emotion, right? You can take them out of the logic system into the emotion system, and then just give them that emotional plea of God wants them to be a pastor, and that's it. Like, that's all she wrote. You get them there, and they're going to go there. And some point later, maybe when everything has, when they have more ability to reflect on things, maybe years later, maybe a decade later, they can look back and say, ooh, I don't know about that. Like, I made that decision without thinking about it in any way.
Yeah. Yeah. And when a decision is made in a really emotional state, it can also feel more final than it is, right? Especially for somebody who is developmentally a middle schooler, a high schooler, even into college. You know, if you've got emotionally driven decisions without somebody to be able to process it with when the emotions have calmed down a little bit. And I love the image of getting on a logical track, right? Because it's a both and. When you're having conversations about living a purposeful life, emotions do need to be a part of that, and emotional responses do need to be a part of that. There's things that need to energize you and that you become passionate and care a lot about. But making a decision only based on emotion, whether it's about what to do for a living or anything else, is lacking if you don't have that logical track running alongside it and the ability to kind of partner and refine why it is that you feel the way that you feel and the difference that you want to make. So before we kind of dive into six conversation families that I've outlined, Jeremy, you and I, like we mentioned, we've got kids in this age range. So when I talk about vocation with my kids, I really try to avoid asking them what they would like to be when they grow up, because my son will say, I have no idea, right? There's too many things out there. My daughter will.
And how old? Let's just for everybody.
Okay. Yeah. So my son turns 13 later this month. He's currently 12.
That's a classic 13-year-old answer to that question.
Absolutely right. And my daughter is 10 in May. So she's 9 going on 10. She kind of takes the Barbie route and gives me all the things. She wants to be an astronaut. She wants to be a veterinarian. She wants to be a zoologist. She wants to be a geologist. She wants to research dinosaurs. She wants to
everything I've ever played at in my fantasy life.
That's right. And so the conversations that my wife and I will have with our kids are kind of based around what they see around the world, right? Like, are there problems that you see that you might want to help solve? And that's a really different question than what do you want to be when you grow up? So that's kind of at least part of our current tact. How about you and your kiddos?
Yeah, I don't ask them what do they want to be when they grow up. Sometimes they make those statements, right? I want to be a whatever. And sometimes it's prompted by teachers or people. We are interested. Like, what are you interested in? What is that kind of thing? And as they age, we start talking about what does that mean for jobs or education or whatever? What kind of goals do you think you might have? But we try to keep it one step back from career.
Yeah.
Right. Because we both know that, like, that's negotiable for the rest of your life. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we don't, yeah, I think you're right. You don't go there. And I think it's like passion. Like, what are you passionate about first? Like, it's a self-discovery. Like, what things get me going? And I think that's important, because that's a huge part of discernment, right? Is discerning my own passions about stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. And actually, that's a tremendous segue to be able to kind of talk about some general ages and families of conversations that you as a church leader, if you're going to talk vocation, not vacation, vocation, might be really, really good to have. So as we talk through these are going to overlap a little bit, because they're kind of going to scaffold on each other in terms of the age ranges. But I like to start somewhere between the age of 8 and 14 with conversations about discovering personal interests and talents, right? Yeah. The stuff that you just naturally gravitate to, the things that you naturally seem to be good at or have an aptitude for, the things that come easy to you. Helping a young person discover those and celebrate them is a tremendous first step when you're starting to talk about living a life with purpose.
Right.
Ages 12 to 16, then if you've had these conversations about where you're figuring out the things that you're interested in and that you're really passionate about and care about, ages 12 to 16, really you can start to have some awesome conversations about lining up those things that you're passionate about with some kind of purpose, right? Mm-hmm. Helping people understand that they can put energy behind the things that they care a lot about in order to make a difference in the world. This would be the difference if I was going to go into my daughter's hope to be a zoologist of some kind someday, right?
Right.
In between the ages of 8 and 14, she's discovered that she really likes animals. She loves learning about animals. She likes interacting with animals. She might discover that there are environments where animals are getting harmed because of pollution or, you know, different things like that. But she doesn't understand necessarily mm-hmm. that she could make a difference in what's causing that pollution, or helping do anything besides, you know, save the whales, if it was this very general sort of phrase to use, right? In between the ages of 12 and 16, you can get a lot more purposeful and start to put some impact and some action plans behind the things that you care about. So you can start to empower young people really between the ages of 12 and 16 so that they can line up their passions with their purpose. At the same time as you're doing that, in between the ages of 14 and 18, you can really start to dive deep into what vocation means and talking about social impact. And this one is actually, in terms of talking about faith life or what a life of discipleship might look like, the idea that we can have an impact on the social good is a huge part of discipleship, right?
Yeah.
That there's systems that are out there that are unjust. There are people that find themselves in situations that they do not have control over, where they are suffering because of the choices of others. And part of our purpose being disciples or being part of a church community is to be able to have a positive social impact and be able to provide some change. Mm-hmm. All right. In between the ages of 16 and 22, starting to figure out conversations related to facing challenges and building resilience. These are the ages where you really start to figure out that you fail sometimes, right?
Right. Yeah.
Nobody bats 1,000 or hits the ball, out of the park every time, right? Like, there are things that we will swing and miss on. There will be challenges that we face. And part of your role as a ministry leader is to help young people build resilience, in the face of challenges, because when we're trying to make social impacts, good social impacts, there's going to be some tough stuff that will come up, right, during the course of that. So helping equip people and be able to talk through what it means to overcome challenges, help them share stories from a faithful perspective about what it means to do hard things and do it purposefully and do it well, really can be tremendous. And we've got a great cloud of witnesses kind of surrounding us, right? There are plenty of stories from the Christian tradition about building resilience and facing challenges as you seek to live a life of purpose. And then as we kind of get into the last two pieces, really in the U.S., these would be college ages, somewhere between 18 and 24, as well as the rest of your life, right? Like, the process of pruning, the process of myelinization, those things continue to happen throughout our entire lifetime. So to think that brain development ends at 25 or ends at 30 kind of is a mistaken idea, right? Like, we will continue to grow. We will continue to figure out new neural pathways and behaviors that we can take on. So 18 to 24 and beyond, figuring out good conversations about how you integrate your faith with your everyday life and work are huge, as is the concept of mentorship and being connected with others that you will continue to learn from and lean on as you grow. This age is fascinating for me if we're talking mentorship between the ages of 18 and 24, because it's kind of the first experience that a young person would have where they are still being mentored by someone else, right? Like, there are still other experts or people that they're connected with that are providing mentoring for them. But now they're realizing that there are people younger than them looking up to that 18-year-old or looking up to that 24-year-old, and they actually find themselves serving in a mentor role for others as well. It's a really interesting two-way street for me.
No, that's absolutely right.
Yeah, yeah. So our encouragement related to vocation, right? Don't be afraid of these conversations. Even though vocation can feel like kind of a nebulous concept or difficult to address, again, the younger that you start helping young people discover their interests, discovering their talents, in your context, those might be called spiritual gifts, right? Helping people understand those from an early age and then building upon that to be able to link what I'm naturally good at and what I care about with the difference that I can make in the world really is pretty huge. And that doesn't always need to look like becoming a clergy person. There's meaningful work that you can do absolutely anywhere and have a high level of integrity while you do it.
And I think it's really important to note this exact method, right? Which is, you know, reflection and application, right? And that is different. That is very different than, than waiting for a burning bush experience where you feel like there is a miraculous revelation from God that that you were supposed to do this or that. I like to say that there are over 3,000 people mentioned in the Bible by name. One of them heard a voice of God from a bush, right? So, like, most people experience calling and vocational discernment outside of God having some audible sound to tell them what to do. And so so the process is reflection and application, not just waiting for a miraculous moment. That if the numbers work out in the Bible, will probably never happen for you. Right. Maybe you're Moses, but probably not.
I think that is a tremendous last thought to be able to leave on, because process is just such a huge part for this entire conversation. Mm-hmm. And really, if you're talking about life as a disciple and how long that can take, process.
That's right.
Jeremy, thank you as always. For those of you that watch live on Facebook, we hope you enjoyed today's Youth Worker Recharge. You can always find our past episodes on umcyoungpeople.org. And if you want to hang out with us live, we will be back next Monday at about this same time. So, Jeremy, thanks as always, and I will see you then.
All right. See ya.